Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Kristen.
Kristen, maybe you've seen this stuff online or read about it in ladies' magazines about pheromone perfumes and creams that are supposedly going to attract mates willy-nilly and blind them to what we really look like and what our personalities really are. They're just going to bring them from all sides.
Oh, yeah. There's also that, it reminds me of that scene in Anchorman where Paul Rudd's character pulls out that Black Panther cologne that I think is supposed to be made of some kind of pheromone.
Right. Well, it turns out in all of this reading that we have done that unless you're a moth or some kind of butterfly or ant, perhaps a pig, pheromones aren't going to do much for you.
They might not. And if you are considering purchasing one of those pheromone perfumes, you might want to rethink, because chances are the active ingredient is a vaginal secretion from a rhesus monkey.
I cringed when I read that. Did you all just cringe? Because I cringed.
I cringed a little bit. So with that said,
right, getting the monkey secretions out of the way.
Yeah. So let's back up a minute and talk about maybe a timeline of pheromones, because the question we're asking today is, do human pheromones exist? And that human distinction is very important, as we will soon learn.
Right. A lot of people have done research into insect pheromones, and they thought, you know, like maybe this could play a part in human attraction. But to the people who coined the term pheromone were Peter Carlson and Martin Luscher. And they came up with that word in 1959, which is derived from the Greek words for to carry and to excite. So it's carrying excitement.
Yes.
You're excited about your fellow moth or elephant.
And there are two major types of pheromones. One is a primer pheromone, which causes physiological changes like hormonal effects. And then there are releaser pheromones, which will produce rapid behavioral effects such as mating.
Right.
So when these naturalists in going back to the 1870s noticed the reaction of male moths to female moths, they thought something must be going on here.
Right. Actually, Carlson and Lucia were doing work with termites. Apparently, I had no idea. Apparently, termites have a caste system.
Oh.
So they were doing work to figure out why and how this caste system was held up. And they figured out that these animals were giving off triggers. And so pheromones, as we think of them now, it's the same definition as from the 1950s when they came up with all this great stuff. Pheromones describe a substance that an animal gives off to trigger a specific behavioral or developmental reaction in another member of the species. So, you know, how do ants find their way to a piece of candy? They're talking to each other. they have the little pheromones, the little scents and the little signals that tell each other, okay, there's food over here. We need to head this way.
Yeah. And they're leaving behind trails for the other ones behind to follow.
Right. So I think if you try to like get some water or something and wipe away part of the ant trail, they get lost.
Because you're wiping away the pheromones.
And that's also mean. but this is, it's not just insects. There was a study earlier than Carlson and Lusher on peacock moths, where a researcher had a female peacock moth under a bell jar, mm-hmm. and it kind of sent this mesh doohickey, and she attracted like 150 male moths,
yeah.
which is disgusting. I'm terrified of moths.
Well, and these kind of moths too are pretty large.
Yeah.
Just imagine.
Yeah.
I'm imagining you as in like a scene from The Birds.
Yeah.
But it's just full of moths.
God.
The entomologist Joseph A. Littner and that French naturalist Jean-Henri Fabre, who had the peacock moths, were first interested in this kind of insect attraction as a way to control insects.
Yeah.
So pheromone research really started as pest control.
Right, yeah. Because if you can stop whatever is making them want to create more moths and mm-hmm. more pinworms and more cockroaches, then you'll have fewer of them. And it's actually worked in some instances.
Yeah.
So
in 1980, for instance, pheromones were used in more than a million traps to capture more than 4 billion beetles in the forests of Norway and Sweden because they were trying to curb an epidemic of bark beetles.
Right. It really saved those forests.
Yeah. 4 billion beetles.
Ugh.
I'm going to put that in your room with all the moths.
I will have a panic attack. Thank you.
And now you transformed it to Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
I am. And I always think about how I would never put my hand in that thing where Willie has to stick her hand in and pull the lever. No, it would never happen.
I'm scared.
But okay, so all this insect research was pretty clear. You know, obviously there are these chemicals, these signals that bugs are putting out to attract each other. But what about mammals? So there's a pig pheromone that turns a sow's attention solely to mating, and they were able. Well, the pheromone stuff for people might not be that great of an invention. It might not actually work. It does work for pigs.
Oh, yeah.
Farmers actually have the thing that they can spray and it gets the pig ready for whatever is about to happen.
And that would be probably an example of the releaser pheromone that produced the rapid behavioral effects.
Right. And elephants secrete some hormones from a gland in their forehead region, and it attracts it, like the stronger it is and the stronger the smell of the urine, the more it attracts estrus female elephants.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, and then there was a study at the Worcester Foundation for Experimental Biology. And this was one of the initial studies trying to figure out whether or not they could identify pheromone compounds in mammals. And they, again, this always, there's a lot of vaginal secretion in pheromone research.
Mm-hmm.
They took a male golden hamster and just rubbed him down with a female golden hamster vaginal secretions and put him in a cage and then brought other male golden hamsters into the cage to see what would happen. Lo and behold, the male golden hamsters were turned on by the vaginal secretions and tried to mate with the other male golden hamsters.
So it's not that they so much know. It's not like they knew he was a male. It's weird. It's like the pheromones are telling them, this is who you need to mate with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it didn't matter that he was a boy hamster.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with biology.
Yeah.
It's all because they were sensing this through something called the vomeronasal organ, or the VNO.
Right. It's actually independent from our main olfactory system. So it's not like we are, when I say we, I kind of mean everybody. It's not like we are smelling pheromones.
Yeah.
It's more like a sensory thing. So animals, insects, they all have this thing, but we actually lost ours. We don't have the tissue anymore. It's located at the VNO for short, because that's a lot easier to say than vomeronasal organ. It is located above the roof of the mouth, and it evolved to detect large molecules and molecules that are dissolved in liquids, which is why your dog licks other dogs as a way of saying, hey, what's up? What have you been up to?
Yeah.
What's new in your life?
So little animals will preen each other.
Exactly.
Just their VNO kicking in.
Right. But, you know, we are not dogs. So
thankfully
we don't lick each other to say hello, because that's disgusting. Or honeybees or moths. We're none of these things. Yeah, like I said, we don't have a functioning VNO. We have the tissue as embryos, which is interesting, but it disappears after birth.
So we don't have it, and yet there are these series of studies done that indicate that some kind of pheromone-induced behavior is going on. And one of the biggest things that one of the most landmark studies that we have to mention that we brought up in our podcast a long time ago on whether or not girls or women, excuse me, periods will sync up. In 1971, Martha McClinic, who's a University of Chicago psychologist, has a study saying that, yes, menstrual synchrony, also known as the McClinic effect, does indeed exist because she charted the menstrual patterns of 135 college girls living together in a dorm, found some overlaps, and presto, it happens. And she assumed that there had to be some kind of hormonal influence. And then we have McClinic in 1998 coming back with this study finding that women who were exposed to cotton pads soaked with underarm secretions, by that we mean sweat, collected from donors, undergoing their first and second phases of their menstrual cycles would influence the menstrual cycle of the women who had the pads under their noses.
Interesting. I mean, we're obviously, you know, we evolved from bacteria as having this response to chemicals. Mm-hmm. Chemicals tell us to do things that maybe we're not aware that we actually want to do.
Or yeah.
Whatever. I'm kind of stumbling with this explanation. But basically, so we can't smell them and we don't seem to have a functioning receptor for them. But research has shown that we do, you know, there are effects that we feel from some sort of hormone.
Right.
And there are a couple of compounds that are maybe thought to be pheromones. It just hasn't been proved yet.
Right. We should probably bring up the dirty t-shirt study, mm-hmm. which is one that we've talked about before in the podcast. And the first one took place in 1995. And I want to say that they've gone back and retested this in more recent years. But basically, they had heterosexual women sniff dirty undershirts belonging to men without seeing their faces. And then they would look at the guys and rate their attractiveness. And long story short, the men who smelled the most attractive from their dirty undershirts ended up having the most different gene complex mm-hmm. of the women who found them the most attractive.
Right. You're looking for somebody who's not your brother.
Exactly. Right. Avoiding inbreeding. So maybe it's something to do with sweat.
Could be. There's something in our sweat glands.
Yeah, and it is
creating magic.
Yeah, and there's a steroid and a derivative of testosterone called androstadienone. And men have more of this than women. Mm-hmm. And so they thought for a while that perhaps this testosterone derivative is the pheromone.
Right.
But in 2007, that kind of went out the window.
Right. Andreas Keller, a geneticist at Rockefeller University, discovered that really it kind of depends. Depending on your olfactory genes, you could either find that chemical pleasant, mm-hmm. you could find it completely repulsive, or you would just not even be able to detect it at all. So it's really kind of a singular, you know, it depends on your nose.
Yeah. Although we got to put nose in quotes because right. remember, pheromones, although they're often characterized as these innate smells that we somehow sense, we aren't processing them in our noses. And again, we're also saying that there is no complete scientific proof that pheromones, human pheromones, really exist. And certainly not in the way that they might in silkworm moths.
Right.
And this is probably because, as the Howard Hughes Medical Institute points out, compared to insects, whose behavior is stereotyped and highly predictable, mammals, such as we are independent, ornery, and complex.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much more to love and sex among humans than just like, I like your chemicals.
Yeah.
You know, Tristram Wyatt of Oxford University is kind of like, in doing all this research, he must be the pheromone guy.
He really likes pheromone studies.
He loves pheromones. So Wyatt said that it's so much more than just visual and social signals. Mm. You know, we're emotional people. We have preferences and prejudices. You know, it might matter that I like the same music as someone, or we come from the same background, than if your chemicals are good smelling.
Yeah. And it makes sense that we would be, possibly driven to those different, gene complexes to ensure, you know, that we could have healthier offspring. But yeah, I mean, boiling everything down to one love potion number 9 seems, I don't know, that also kind of take the fun out of things. But going back to that Randy Hutter Epstein article in Slate, and she also wrote, a similar article for Psychology Today. She was so frustrated with seeing all of these, recommendations in Shape Magazine, on yourtango.com, and in, surprise here, Cosmopolitan, mm-hmm. about how to enhance your pheromonal attraction, or attractive powers, I should say. And for instance, Shape Magazine recommends that couples work out together and don't shower immediately, because you continue to release attraction boosting hormones for an hour after you finish exercising. Also, you know, like, don't put perfume on your neck, breasts, or genitals, because that will, quote unquote, hide the important pheromones that drive men wild.
And my favorite,
yeah,
from Cosmo.
This is, yeah,
just don't wear underwear.
Mm-hmm. Because, and this is also, this is a direct quote, because odors in your pheromones will more easily waft into the air and be picked up subliminally by the primitive part of his brain.
I don't want anything wafting. Not, I mean, I don't want to refer back to our douching podcast or anything, but let's, we all saw what happened with Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears. Just put underwear on.
A PSA from Ms.
Caroline
Irvin.
Right. Well, no, actually one of my favorite quotes regarding all of this hooey with the pheromone perfume is from Stuart Firestein of Columbia University. He said, let's just say someone sold me this pheromone so that I could attract women. There's no supermodel pheromone, so I put this stuff on and I'm deluged with horny women of all sorts. And the only thing they have in common is they all have a nose. What good is that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of guy friends who would love to be deluged with women.
And if you're still wondering, you know, like what the science is saying, just take it from the book title. All right. Richard Doty, director of University of Pennsylvania's Smell and Taste Research Center, wrote the book entitled, really sums it all up, The Great Pheromone Myth.
Yeah. He says it's all mythology.
Mm-hmm.
It plays into how we want there to be something more primal and special about the attraction we have to someone.
Right. And it's not, again, like the science can be a little tricky to untangle, because they're not saying that there aren't some kind of chemical signals that go on between people, but we're not in the same way as silkworm moths.
Right. And we have yet to really nail something down for certain.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I mean, we've pinpointed stuff in insects. It hasn't been as easy in humans.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was also interesting that Keller study, Caroline, that you mentioned, that found that that found that people's reactions to that compound in sweat varies from person to person.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Just kind of like attraction in general, it varies from person to person. But there was one Swedish study from 2005, just to throw out one more kind of pheromone-related study, that had an interesting hypothesis about pheromones, the hypothalamus, and possibly biological basis for homosexuality.
Right. Yeah, this was actually really interesting. The study looked into the effects on the brain of two chemicals. There was a testosterone derivative produced in men's sweat and an estrogen-like compound in women's urine, both of which they thought are, you know, could be potential pheromones. These two chemicals activate the brain in a very different way than normal scents do. So it's not like you're smelling freshly baked cookies or something and you're cookies. It's something more subliminal.
Yeah.
So anyway, the estrogen-like compound just activated the typical scent receptors in women, you know, didn't do anything special. But in men, it lit up the hypothalamus, a region of the brain that governs sexual behavior. Now, for the male sweat chemical, that activated the hypothalamus in women, but just the usual receptors in men. However, they repeated the study and included gay men as a third group,
mm-hmm.
and that had interesting results. They found that gay men responded to the two compounds in the exact same way that women did.
So when they smelled the male sweat, In other words, it lit up the same area of the hypothalamus right. as it did in the women. And they tested this too on gay women. And for some reason, the New York Times article is sort of vague about it, but the researchers said that the results needed further assessment before they could offer any types of conclusions. And so again, this is just another example of, yes, we're seeing some kind of behavioral or physiological change, but they're not exactly sure what genetic components are causing it.
Right. So it's all sort of up in the air, unless you're a moth. Unless you're a moth listening to our podcast.
Or
fascinating.
Silkworms out there everywhere. Like, this explains everything.
I know. I just can't get that lady moth out of my head.
But again, just remember, if you are tempted to pick up some of that pheromone guaranteed perfume, just think about rhesus monkeys, vaginal secretions, active ingredient. So with that, we invite your thoughts on pheromones, mom stuff at howstuffworks.com is our email address. And I've got an email here from Nathan, and it's in response to our episode on romance novels. And he offers this multicultural insight. He writes, one of the largest romance fiction markets in Japan is for the kind of choose-your-own-adventure style of games called Bishoujo. Since 1982, men have been reading through novel-length romance stories to develop serious relationships with imaginary characters in a very similar way to how women build imaginary relationships in American and European romance novels. There may not be as much scientific literature about the relationship between these two because of their separation between industries, but really it is an important topic not to forget. If y'all can find research for the multicultural aspects of your topics, they would definitely appeal to a wider audience. So I'd never heard of Bishoujo. Very interesting.
Neither have I. Okay, this is an email from Jamie about our HPV episode. She said, I do want to clarify something you said on the show, that West Virginia and D.C. have HPV mandates for middle school girls. While the word mandate is accurate, it is misleading given the number of exemptions parents can get. In both these states / municipalities, parents can choose not to vaccinate their daughters on their sole discretion without any religious or medical reason, a so-called philosophical exemption. Given that anyone who wants can exempt, it's not fair to necessarily call these bills mandates. Rather, the purpose of the bill is to provide vaccines to children who don't have access to high-quality medical care. By mandating vaccines, families are more aware of their necessity. The state ensures that vaccines are made available for all children, and most important of all, low-income children can receive mandated vaccines for free through the federal Vaccines for Children program. Thus, the purpose of these bills is not to force children to be vaccinated, a common misperception in the general press, but rather to provide vaccines to those children who tend to slip through the cracks of the medical system. Thanks, Jamie.
And I have to offer a quick correction right now from our Drag Queens podcast. Mm-hmm. I believe we referenced the Stonewall riots happening in San Francisco.
They were in New York.
It was in New York.
Yeah.
What were we thinking?
I don't know.
Maybe we're smart.
Guess not. we just read a lot of stuff.
It happens.
Got mixed up.
So if you have anything to send our way, again, email address is momstuff@howstuffworks.com. We'd also love to see you over on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter at momstuffpodcast. You can check out the blog during the week. It's Stuff Mom Never Told You at howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha. Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.